Hi, and welcome to Curious Conversations, the podcast where curiosity meets connection. Thanks for joining as we discuss captivating stories and ideas and engage in thought-provoking conversations with experts, enthusiasts, and everyday people. We hope to ignite a curious spirit as we embark on a quest for understanding one curious conversation at a time. So let's jump in this together. Welcome to the world of Curious Conversations. And welcome to Curious Conversations. We are your host, Carly and Mandy, and today we are talking about true crime pen pals.
That's right.
So I actually love the concept of pen pals, you know, generally speaking. A website a while ago that connected people from all over the world that just kind of loved to write, but not just writing, that receiving of snail mail letters. And I ended up having some really fun conversations with people, mostly really from different areas of the United States, and they were places I hadn't visited. And so, you know, just to kind of dig in and ask questions about where they lived and what they did. And that was all very interesting. But I did have a lady in France that I corresponded with several times, and send each other cute little gifts and snacks, you know, things that you can't get from your home country. And it was just a whole lot of fun.
You know, I had a pen pal when I was a kid. Okay, so they were far away in some other country, and I'm ashamed that I don't remember where that was now because I think I was like 8. Yeah, but I did love that. I remember it was a lot of fun, and I think it was like that age where they're teaching you how to write a letter back in the day. I don't know what they do now, but, you know, stamp it, put the, you know, address it in the right place and all that. And so this was a way to connect people and learn how to write a letter and, you know, have a little fun with it. But then I also made a friend later on when I worked for a Girl Scout camp in the 90s. And she was from South Africa, and we stayed in touch for a while, and we would send pictures and drawings and stuff. And she worked a cruise ship, so she always had interesting stories to tell. And so that was sort of a pen pal in a way, because I never saw her again.
Oh, I love that. You know, we used to be able to do that in school. That was a very safe thing. And I think they probably still have some where students can write students, but now, you know, you can't write a student as an adult. It just gets way too complicated. That brings me to, I recently discovered a website that has that same concept, but it is a little darker. It's definitely not going to be taught in school. It is writeaprisoner.com. And you know, I definitely found an interest. You do have to sift through, as some of the inmates are looking for like life partners and a lot more than just a casual conversation, almost kind of like a prison pals meets eHarmony sort of thing.
Right?
Yeah. But you know, you can find those that are just interested in talking. And I think this particular site I was drawn to because they have some other things, you know, art contest and poetry contest for inmates that you can vote on, which I thought was really cool. And then they have a program called Books Behind Bars, and that's where organizations can request reading materials, and those are then sent to the prisons for inmates to have access to. So as a writer, you know, I was instantly drawn to that. But, you know, you can read testimonies on there from the inmates who have received letters and then, you know, have formed friendships and received the advice and encouragement, and kind of how their rehabilitation was impacted by others that were willing to engage with them. And so that's all very encouraging. And they have a page on there, you know, if you're kind of like, wait, what? You're doing what? They have a page and they share some research on it. It's Why Write a Prisoner page. And then they've got the Federal Bureau of Prisoners. You know, those two sites show that both male and female prison pen pals who establish and maintain positive contacts outside of the prison walls, all while kind of pursuing educational opportunities and seeking that, you know, normalization through friendships, they're actually less likely to reoffend, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that is. I'm a big advocate for, you know, positive impact on prisoners, no matter how you feel about what they did or why they're there or, you know, what level of crime they committed. I just don't see anything negative coming from that, you know, personally. That's my take on it.
You know, some inmates get a ton of mail, but there are some that don't. They're kind of starved for mail. And it almost is like a silo that you're in. So, you know, there's some comfort to it for some. Others kind of, they're written by fanatics, kind of treating them as stars. So it really just depends. You know, some people flock to certain crimes and some don't. But anyway, so that leads me to our, I'm going to call you a guest for today. it's your favorite co-host, my favorite co-host for sure. And someone that our listeners are already familiar with. It's you, Mandy. and you have some really interesting stories, and I've always found them to be quite curious. So I think our listeners definitely will too. So we're going to hear from Mandy about her interest in writing prisoners, kind of how she got started and even the scoop on what those correspondents looked like. And in case you didn't know, Mandy has one of those letters in a prominent crime museum. So we're going to hear all about that. But first, we want to share with you this week's Curious Dish. This is the part of our show where we dish about the most curious thing we've seen this week. So, Mandy, what you got for us?
Okay. Well, that was quite the introduction. So I know that sets off some curious thoughts there. Let me step aside for a little bit and give to our Curious Dish. And I don't even know how curious this might seem. If you weren't there, it's like when you try to tell something and you think, well, maybe you had to be there. But I'll set the image in your mind anyway. Not too far from where I live, there's just kind of heading on the outskirts of town, so to speak. There's been a van and somebody, I guess, staying there or whatever. I never thought too much about it, never looked into that. It's, I don't know if that's on... I don't know what the story is. Okay. So, but you know, you pass it and you just think of, you know, okay, that's still there. And I haven't really thought much about it. And then the other day when I passed by, there are multiple people around. The road's kind of lined up with cars. There's a couple of cars across the street, people crossing over. It looks like there's something going on. And no matter how much I look, I can't see what's going on.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what this is, but it, you know, it piques my interest. And so I'm looking and there's all these dogs and they're not just like scroungy, you know, scrappy kind of dogs of different sizes. They all look at a glance like black Rottweilers and they're big, healthy animals. They don't look like they would just be loose in the woods. And this is like the side of the road and there's woods and a creek or whatever right through there. And even the dogs look sort of like what's going on. And they're sort of, you know, my creative thought process is, you know, some sort of criminal thing. They've discovered something. But, you know, it might have been the most simple thing. But I had this innate feeling inside, like this weird feeling that something was up. Do you ever do that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm super nosy. So even something that's not something... My mind wants to make it something.
Yeah. So I knew there was a word for it. Thank you, nosy. Yeah. I never did find out what it was. I was picking up a grocery order. And so I come back by, you know, on purpose that way to be like, maybe I can see now. But it was still a little bit of the same kind of hubbub, so to speak. I don't know what it was, but those dogs really got my attention because they were very alert and they were there. And I thought, are they looking for more dogs? Is there on the search for something? But everybody had the same sort of inquisitive, searching look on their faces. And like I said, the dogs even kind of did too. And it was just a surreal scene.
Okay, now that's interesting. I would definitely have to ask some questions. Yeah, go back to the scene and be like, hey, what happened here? Because that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some nosy site that I can look up and find out what was going on in that area.
Yep. Well, you know, I think for me, my curious dishes, it was curious for me. I'll say I have a stepdaughter who loves kind of all things Asian. She likes Asian foods, and she's very experimental with what she will eat. Super proud of her, because I am not. And I know you are, Mandy, because the first time I ever went somewhere with you, I think you ate cow tongue. Was that, am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah. So I ate cow tongue, one time with you. And then a time before that, I had some kind of soup when we went to lunch, and I think it had a foot sticking out of it or something. What was it? A chicken foot or the half end of the fish or something skeletal.
I will stick with my chicken. All white meat, please.
I know. I remember your look.
I'm not adventurous in that, but I thought, well, this girl is. More power to her. I wanted to take a picture of your meal, but I didn't know you as well as I do now.
Oh, funny.
I would have taken that foot home.
Yeah, you could have taken a picture.
Yeah. Well, my stepdaughter is very adventurous in her eating habits, and you know, and so she loves ramen and miso and things like that. So she found an Asian market, and it was, I don't know, an hour or so from our home. And I thought, we're gonna go. I'm gonna take her. And so we just loaded up in the car and took a trip over there, and it was fantastic. It was such a great experience. And I can't even remember the name of the market, because it wasn't in English, but you know, we had a lot of fun. There was a lot of new things to try, and we bought some things. But you know, probably my favorite part of the day was two-sided. One, when you're coming in to the building, they have a ton of these little claw machines where you can win these little cheap, you know, like Temu type prizes.
Oh, yeah.
And that was so fun. You know, we won some stuff, and so we got to take some little toys home, and it cost a fortune, but it was fun. The experience of it was so worth it. And then in the back of this market, you know, you get to walk through, and they've got the most amazing produce section and all types of different foods. But they had a fish market in the back, and they had these massive tanks with fish in them. And I just sat and played with the fish for a little while.
Oh, no, I don't think you're supposed to do that before they're killed.
I wanted to take them home. I thought, could I keep these in our spare bathtub or no?
But
it was definitely a curious experience for me, and it was a lot of fun. I highly recommend, hey, find something weird that you don't normally get to do, and go do it, and just try to make a fun day out of it.
Yeah, step outside of the box. And I really appreciate when you said you were going, I was like messaging you really quick. Can you get this item for me? Because it's, you know, it's better to get it from an Asian market. And it's, you know, I haven't had it in a while. And I was like, oh, yum. And so that's the little, you know, pepper sauce. It's like I think they call it a crisp. It's got peanut oil, and it's delicious. I can't speak intelligently on it, but I can tell you how good it is.
Well, I bought my own jar, so we're going to have to get together and cook something with it, because I don't know what to do with it. So I'm excited
I'll help you out.
Awesome. Well, you know, getting back to our prison pen pals, I do want to say, I wrote a prisoner lately. His name came up in some research that I was doing, and I decided to reach out. And that is something that I have never done before. His name is Jamie Ray Ward, and he was accused of murder as well as some other pretty heinous things in the early 90s. His original sentence was to be executed. That was later brought down to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And he's an older gentleman now. And I have some curiosities about his time in prison and what he might say to those of us who have not lived the life that he has. Basically, just, you know, I wanted to ask him if he would talk to me about his case, about his life. And I'm curious about the reformation process and if that is something that he's come to terms with or where he is on that. I reached out. So far, I haven't gotten a response, but this is something that I did very recently, so I didn't expect to by now. And I'm okay, honestly, if he chooses not to respond, but if he does, I figure I'll be back on here to share with you guys about it. But for today, we do have some insight into what it is like to receive a letter back from a prisoner. So Mandy, we're just really appreciative that you're open to sharing that with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me as your guest. I feel like I need to sort of wink now, but I can't wink, and this is literally audio. So,
well, listen, our listeners out there, if you have not had the pleasure of watching Mandy try to wink, it is a real treat.
Well, it's certainly something.
Well, Mandy, I have so many questions about your pen pal adventures, but I think probably the best place to start is simply asking, like, hey, you know what? Who'd you write to?
Okay. Well, let me give the cover everything announcement before I begin that this was quite some time ago. And it was mid to late 90s when I decided to write to Richard Ramirez. And if people don't know who that is, they probably know him as the Night Stalker. And he was, as you say, responsible for some really, really horrible crimes in the 80s. And, just a search for that if you don't already know. But that's who I started with, was Richard Ramirez. And I was curious. And at the time, I've always had that curious mind. At the time, I thought, I don't know, it was sort of like that Silence of the Lamb moment. And I thought I was somebody and could get something and maybe even an answer, you know, like that thing hidden that nobody else got. That's how full of myself I was.
You were young.
I was young. That's it. I was young. You can use that for a lot of things.
Yes.
But well, he wasn't the only one.
Yeah. So how many do you think different people, if you just had to say off the cuff?
Yeah. So there were two main people. So it was Richard Ramirez and Henry Lee Lucas, who was another very interesting case. And those were really, pre-internet, but you know, not everybody had internet at that time and had that ability just to find all this stuff. So those were two hot names in the world of true crime. Back then it was reading, you know, just reading a book on true crime. So those were the two. There were some others, but those were the two main ones.
Okay. So did they respond to you?
Yeah. So they did respond. Actually, both of them responded. So Richard responded almost immediately. And that was exciting, not in the, you know, we talked about people being fanatical or whatever, or seeing them as stars rather than murderers. But it was something I guess I thought may not be attainable. So when he wrote to me personally, I was pretty surprised.
Wow. Yeah. I think I would be too. That would be kind of shocking. I mean, I think it would be kind of scary, maybe. I mean, was there any, whoa, I just got a letter from a serial killer.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, but there was a whole lot of that for my mom. I still lived at home at the time.
Oh, poor mom.
Yeah. So, I was technically an adult, but, I was probably like, 19, 20, something like that. And, so I was, I wasn't as cautious as I should be because I just put my address right there on the envelope and everything.
Oh, no, not even a P.O. box.
No, I did do a P.O. box later. So,
well, were their letters like?
Okay, so when I wrote, again, I was young and I had all these questions and I was bold enough to think I could just lay it out and they were going to tell me, right? So when Richard wrote to me and I have these, sort of bullet point questions, he wrote me back in the same way. And it didn't appear like bullet points like I had out. It was just, he had that immaturity too, even though he was way older than me. And if I didn't know what he was truly responsible for, which, believe me, I am not condoning, advocating, doing any of those kind of things for this. It's actually terrifying. But if I had not known that and I had just read these letters, I would not have known it. You cannot tell. Mm.
Wow. Yeah. So I don't know, this might be overstepping, but, you know, do you want to share what you asked him or what information did you share with him or tell him about you?
Okay. Again, irresponsible and young, mostly maybe irresponsible. I don't know. But, so I asked some questions, told a little bit about myself, as you know, just like you would with a pen pal. But then I did, so I asked anything from tell me about the crimes, because again, I was that bold, to, you know, what kind of music do you like? What kind of hobbies do you have? I bypassed all the things that make you sort of pause and say, let me word this a certain way. I was just as candid as I am with everything, even though this was a dangerous person. So, I don't mind sharing a little bit and give an idea of what he sounded like. So here's one. I have a letter right here, and I did save the letters. So this would have been in July of 98. He addresses and says, Mandy, hi, I got your letter. Nice to hear from you. You look great in the pictures that you sent me. Send more. It's just like, and he writes sort of like somebody who is, you know, like the teenage boy that's kind of like the bad boy, while not the horrible terror that that he was. But he says, happy birthday in August. And you like photography? Me too. You have a camera? You have a boyfriend? All these questions. I've changed a little bit. Yes. So I guess I asked that. Of course, I don't have my letters. God knows who has those letters, because he's, you know, since passed. But did you go to your high school reunion? Not quite sure why he asked that, since I wouldn't have really been out long enough. But okay. And then he jumps right to, can you send me a money order?
Oh, no.
Right. Just like those bad boys. Can you send me some money? He says, I would really appreciate it. Anything would help. Make it out to my name if you can. Things like that catch me, like the wording on certain things. Make it out to my name if you can. Yeah, I've heard of Twiggy. So this is referencing someone in a band. And so I had asked him about music and all. And that's someone who used his last name, Twiggy Ramirez, from the band Marilyn Manson, who... I don't know if you know or not, but they take the first name of somebody glamorous and the last name of somebody horrific. So, yep. Yeah, I wanted to know if he was familiar with that and what he thought about that. So he goes on to say he should send money, but he don't. Yeah, then this is all one paragraph too. They execute someone here July 14th. You have family? I'll send a pic of me. Next time. Bye, Richard.
Did he send a picture?
No.
No.
No, he's just a liar. Imagine that. He's a murderer and a liar.
Imagine.
So, yeah, I was always disappointed when I didn't get what I asked for. But, you know, it was an interesting correspondence, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm pretty naive about the prison system in general and how that works, but I can't figure out what exactly you would need money for. And then I don't know how he would send a picture. I mean, I'm assuming they don't have cameras or, you know, a Walmart print station. I don't know.
Right. I know. So back in the day, I can't speak, you know, for now, everything's changed so much, but I do know that he was one who got some of the most fan mail. you know, we'll call it that. But people would send him. He wrote to me once on some stationery somebody had sent him. And so people would send him things. So he probably had access to certain things like photos and all if people sent those to him. But any money back in the day would have went towards stamps or paper or, I mean, it could have went towards practical things like soaps or lotions. But he probably would have been like, I'm writing you, you need to pay for the stamps. So, you couldn't always send stamps in because you could lace stamps with something. They would have to be bought from the, you know, the place they had, the store that they had to buy things from.
Oh, I would love to interview someone who works in the prison system and can give a little insight. That might be something we need to look into.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very different too from back then. And you know, he never sent picture, but I know he sent drawings out to people. So that was the next thing I asked in a letter: can you send me a drawing? Because he did draw some pictures, and some of those were really scary. It was that childish, juvenile type attempt. So it looked like if your middle school kid had took a really wrong turn.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Really crude drawings of what you knew to be either victims or the hope for a victim. It was very creepy, and it's very strange feeling to be dealing with somebody that you know is creepy, but they don't read creepy. Their letters don't read in that way.
Right. Wow. So how did you feel in writing these guys?
At the time, I just felt, I felt that it was very interesting and that I was getting into the mind of somebody who was, you know, dangerous and had done these things that I couldn't relate to at all. Like the only thing that I hurt is a spider, and I really don't have much tolerance for spiders. You know, right. I don't relate in that way. I'm not a desensitized person, but I will say you have to sort of take that and put that aside, thinking of what all somebody does to correspond with them in a way that seems sort of chummy. I hate to use the word friend, but, you know, you're being friendly with somebody who is a horror of a person, you know?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so in that way, at the time I felt different than I do today. I was just sort of, like probably a lot of people would say sort of starstruck, which is a really awful way to put that, but you don't think that you would ever have any dealings with these people who are so infamous, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, I absolutely understand that. So who did you hear from the most?
Okay. So, you know, when I started writing Henry Lee Lucas, he was a very different writer. And I got about as many for a long time letters from him as I did from Richard Ramirez. But it seemed like Richard liked to like jot his thoughts down and just kind of answer back to you. Whereas Henry Lee Lucas was very, you could tell his letters were thought out. He was older. A good bit older at that time. And he came across in a like sort of grandfatherly way. And his were all always very cordial and very respectful. And Bridget Ramirez is just laying it out there. Like I said, like he's some guy you're dating in high school. Henry Lee Lucas, though, he was, his story is very interesting. And so he did some really horrific things, but you get into that mindset of different reasons why people do what they do. And he was very, I think he was sorry for what he did. And some of the things maybe he didn't even understand, because that's the whole thing of whether he did what all he said he did, or he was just using that for bragging rights, which is super bizarre, but it happens. Right. But he like sent me a Christmas card. This was the kind of person, pen pal he was. Yeah, he sent me a Christmas card with a bear on the front with a little Santa hat. And, you know, it read more like, you know, hope you and your family are well this season, that kind of thing.
Wow. Okay. Well, so I know we've mentioned your mom, but, mm-hmm. you know, besides her, did other family members or friends know at the time that you were doing this? Because, like, this is not something that was super popular, right?
Right. No, true crime was not trending at that point. It was as far as, like, Ann Rule and reading and that kind of thing, but it was a different scene than it is now. And so if you got any information, that's where you got it, or you were really scouring some stuff at the library on microfiche, if anybody knows what that is anymore. So right. Yeah, no, my family, the rest of my family didn't know, and I'm sure my mom didn't share that. She you know, wrung her hands about that. So
bless her heart.
I know. Bless her heart now in retrospect. I just thought, are you kidding me? There's no way you're going to stop me. I'm going to learn what's going on. And I'm going to, but I did get a P.O. box. I did use a P.O. box to, you know, continue corresponding. But no, I don't think anybody else in the family knew until after the fact, like maybe in the past couple of years. And the friends that I had that I told, they were right there with me. They wanted to know what was said and all. And that was just like a close-knit group of friends.
Yeah. I mean, in all, it's fascinating, really, you know, just to, and I think that's why true crime is such a big thing. You know, people want to see inside the minds of people who think differently, who act differently and act outside of those societal norms and just to see what's going on there. You know, true crime is wildly popular right now. So how do you feel about that? You know, what got you into true crime? And is that kind of an interest for you now?
Okay. So, true crime was an interest to me in, you know, late high school and just out of high school. Back then I didn't like to, I had a couple of authors I read, but, I wasn't even writing. I just wrote poetry. And so, what I mostly read, was for informational purposes. And so I did start reading some true crime books, and I found it fascinating that people could possibly be that different from me, which, you know, as a teenager and young adult, you kind of tend to think everybody thinks like you do. And so when you hear some of these things that are bizarre, I guess it's the same intrigue that there is now with a lot of true crime, you know, documentaries and docuseries. And because I mean, it is out there. There are so many things out there about true crime. To try to answer all of that, I think that back then I was reading it. I found it interesting. I liked from a, I guess from a psychological standpoint, and just I'm always curious about people and why they do what they do. I finally just got to the point where I thought, you know what? This is interesting. I wonder if I could talk to one of them directly. And that's something that I think a lot of people watching these shows would probably love to get their hands on. A direct contact, a direct letter from somebody. Right. I mean, you know, they'd probably eat it up. Would I do that today, though? It's golly. So my curiosity is still there. Probably my letters and the exchange would look a lot different. You know, I realize now, and I even wrote a short story about someone, you know, sort of midway through life, looking back on the choices they made and wondering, would I do it the same, or would I do it at all or different, you know, this sort of thing. And I stumbled across my letters in the attic a few years ago, and that sort of brought all this back up. And I wouldn't do it the same. If I did it at all, it would not be like just a morbid curiosity and from a selfish, psychological aspect. I try to be as candid as I can about it, even though it might make me look just like a freak show, but I always try to be honest. But, now, for instance, I have suggested, to the church I attend that we set up something to write prisoners, and it's more of an outreach, like a community outreach, to know there's a place of non-judgment. There's a place for an exchange. There's a place where, you know, they can learn that there's more than just the prison walls. So I guess that's just a level of maturity and where I am in my life.
Yeah. You know, I feel like, there is some value in that, you know, there is that just curiosity. And I'd love to talk to somebody who's in a different place than I am. But, you know, you never know how you're impacting someone, whether that is encouraging them to further their education or to seek, you know, some type of a spiritual justification, or, you know, to get their soul right. And so you never know, you can impact someone in a positive way. And who needs that more than someone who's sitting in a prison cell? And honestly, they're probably a little more open to that because they don't have those outside distractions. And so, I definitely think I can relate to that of it wouldn't necessarily be like that, you know, morbid curiosity anymore, but definitely to make a connection with another person and to see, can I impart anything positive into this person's life? I do have another question, and this is kind of a two-parter. I want to know, what is kind of the weirdest thing that you found out? But I also want to know, what was like the most normal?
Okay, so the weirdest thing for Richard Ramirez was probably, you know, he got into a little bit of inappropriate talk that I won't share all of that on here. But that, I guess, in the fact that it was strange, I guess that's not weird for him, but it was weird to sort of read that somebody's being intimate with you in this way, that they're sharing some stuff. He was very, very open, and he was, and then he would just bounce those questions, you know, right off of that back to you. Like, tell me about this. Tell me, like, no boundaries, which obviously, I mean, someone who's a serial killer, you don't expect to have boundaries, but it was just kind of like, whoa, you know, the things written back to me. But I would say that share that you're getting something very raw from somebody, you know, and then he would also tell about other killers. So he liked to share, but hey, did you know so-and-so did this? Almost like gossip.
Oh no, like spilling the tea.
Yeah. He's funny. Like, I don't know if you know this or not, but yeah. So, that was kind of weird. And you realize, oh gosh, you have that moment. You know, what am I doing exactly? But the most normal, for him was probably the fact that there was a childish type thing that almost seemed like an innocence of somebody who you picture like a little kid who's meeting somebody, and they're like, or somebody comes over like that's company for the weekend back in the old days, you know, and it's like, hey, tell me about this and tell me this story. And, you know, what did you do when you were in the service, or, you know, like little innocent questions. He was really eager for that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is there anyone that you just think, man, I wish I would have written blank?
Charles Manson.
Oh, well, yeah, of course.
Of course. The funny thing about Charles Manson, he didn't do anything like these people did. Right. But, you know, he's the prolific one. But yeah, I would have loved to have had that response just to see what in the world he said, you know. And I think that was the thing in my letters, is I didn't want to write the things that maybe everybody was asking of them as a murderer. But, you know, what kind of foods do you like? This kind of thing, which probably, you know, came across very chummy. But I wanted to know the other things. That wasn't, you couldn't get online and like look up a million things about somebody back then. So, you know, as far as the other one, that I was talking about before, Henry Lee Lucas, I got to tell you, I said that his like Christmas card and all that was kind of the normal side. I don't know how weird this is. He didn't give in to a lot of weird. He at one point said, if I did kill somebody, or maybe if I killed somebody. So he'd really skirt that. But I'll tell you something interesting he did was he gave, I guess, permission to his cellmate to write to me. So I got a letter out of the blue that I didn't ask for.
Okay. He was just passing you around a little bit.
Oh, it's funny. And from the just the nicest guy on paper, Carlos Gonzalez. And he was very respectful and said, "Hey, I was told that you might write me back if I wrote you and I get really lonely." And he said, "I'll talk to a man or a woman, anybody. I want somebody to talk to." And his letters are more like that. And they're, you have sympathy from that point. I didn't know anything but what this guy told me, because he wasn't someone who hit the headlines back in the day. But I will say, I looked at him up recently, and it is true what he told me, which he did. He did kill two people after they brutally beat his son. And so, you know, I don't know that whole story, but it was just interesting now all these years later to look that up, because that was in the 90s as well. But it was kind of humorous to go out and get that letter in the mail. And I'm thinking, who in the world is this from a prison in Texas? So it was the cellmate, and he wrote me, you know, a few letters for a little bit of time.
So now I think I know the answer, but these letters are read. They're, you know, they're viewed before they're sent out and before your letters are delivered to the prisoner. Is that correct? They're kind of watched by guards, or?
That's correct. And that's what Richard had said at one point was, you know, I can't answer all you want. Who knows how eager and, you know, crazy I was with my questioning. But he said, "I can't answer all these questions because they read the mail here." And I'm like, oh, okay. But, you know, I know I kept digging because I was, like I say, I was like that back then, and maybe on some level now, but certainly not like I was. But it gave me the, that first, you know, there wasn't such a distance in learning something. I was getting that firsthand, and it was very interesting.
Did you write any unknown prisoners?
I did. I have a little container that I keep these letters in, because although they're weird and dark in nature, there won't be any more of these. So in that, I also have, it's sort of my inmate basket here. And I do have some people that I knew personally, unfortunately, that did some time here or there in jail. And, you know, they were just like the regular people who made mistakes and nothing at this other level. But I kept their letters. It just sort of makes a nice little weirdo collection here.
You know, I love some weirdo collections.
I know you do.
Well, I do talk for just a second about going back to Richard Ramirez, because I know I was able to go on a little field trip with you to a crime museum. What can you share with us about that?
Okay, so the largest crime museum in the nation is Alcatraz East in Tennessee, and they have all the real stuff. You know, they have, it's huge. You saw it. It's huge.
Yep.
You know, and I'm limited since I did contribute to their museum. I'm limited on how I share, but I know I can say this right here, that they have one of my letters from Richard Ramirez. So I was able to donate that, and we went, there was a group of 25 of us, and Carly, you got to come, and they sort of unveiled that in a pen pal section, and we had a whole event out of that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. The whole museum is just fascinating, and it's definitely worth the trip over. It takes a while to get through it, honestly, because you just want to stop and read everything and take it all in. And so, you know, I could have probably spent a full 2 days there, but just to kind of get to see your part of that was fascinating. It was like, my friend made it.
I know. It was great. Kind of, it was a joke among my friends from back in the day, I guess, that you know, I knew that weird stuff would work out for me sooner or later. You know, it's, I guess it's bragging rights of sort, but it's, it came about in the fact that I just thought, like I did back in the day, and thought, hey, what if I wrote somebody, would they answer back? And I thought, what if I wrote to these people and said, hey, I've got a letter I'd like to donate, would they accept it? And you know, it kind of went from there, and they didn't have anything of Richard Ramirez's.
Wow. Well, I know you were able to donate a letter, and then you had a handprint.
I did. Yeah, I got to share that. So I had asked him, you know, to send me a drawing before, and that's the drawing. I didn't get one of those, you know, intricate detailed drawings, but he traced his hand, which is very scary large. It's a huge hand. And so I made a copy of that and laminated that for everybody. I gave a presentation and all to the group and as you know, and so when I did that, you guys got to put your hand on that and see who was the closest, which was that weird?
No, you know, it was actually fascinating / terrifying that any human could have hands that large. It was, he had really big hands. It was probably almost double what my finger length is. It was shocking and a little scary when you think about where all he has taken those hands. So,
oh my gosh, I know. Yeah, it was a monster's hand for sure. Yeah, literally. Yeah. Yep. That was weird.
Well, tell us how people can learn more about Richard Ramirez, but also Henry Lee Lucas.
Okay, so the easiest, besides, you know, just looking that up and all, and looking at the museum and all that kind of stuff, you can look up The Night Stalker, which is on Netflix. The Night Stalker is the hunt for a serial killer. And that goes into a lot of detail. And then also on Netflix is Henry Lee Lucas, The Confession Killer. Now, I will say the Night Stalker one is like most of the Richard Ramirez stuff. It's very disturbing, very scary. But the Henry Lee Lucas, you'll just be like scratching your head, like, what? It's sort of, I don't want to say it's lighter in nature because it's certainly not, but it taps into that part of you that thinks, why did he do that? Why did he do this? And why did he say that? And it's just total bizarre stuff.
Yep. So just a disclaimer, those are probably not kid friendly, obviously, no. But
yeah, well, none of this is, don't do this at home. Don't try this at home.
Well, listen, we are so appreciative of our listeners, and we do our very best to bring you episodes that are fun, informative, but also entertaining. So if you have a show idea that you'd like to see in an upcoming episode, let us know. Thank you so much, Mandy, for the big share. We really appreciate that. And don't forget to join us next week as the spotlight changes. And I'll be the one sharing about my journey with some cyber sleuthing in an upcoming episode that is called Curiously True Crime. So we will see you next week. Well, listen, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, where we post exclusive content, contests, and so much more. And of course, you can keep up with our episodes through Podbean or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And as always, if you have a story that sparks curiosity or you have something that you want us to talk about, just shoot us an email to ourcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.